All right, now, on our agenda for our next item, and if we could have the back door closed, because I know for folks who are sitting in the back, it's probably difficult to hear when it's open because, you know, the exhibits are right out there. Next on our agenda is pursuing employment, independence, and equality for all Californians with disabilities. I know Director Sauer was supposed to be with us today, although he was called away in hearings, and we don't know if those meetings and such will get done in time. So Director Sauer is not here at this point. We do have Joe Xavier, Deputy Director, Specialized Services Division, California Department of Rehabilitation. We all know him. Yes, we do. And we also have, and I was thrown by this, but we have Elena Gomez. I know her as Rosa. And Rosa is Assistant Deputy Director, Specialized Services Division. Oops, wait, what did I do? It is Elena. It is. Okay. Not all Gomez's. Joe is telling me not all Gomez's are the same. You know, I have Gomez's in my family, too. So, you know, we're everywhere. And Joe and Rosa, I'd like to welcome you. Everyone, please give a warm, warm welcome to Joe and Rosa. And we're going to do a little bit of a different twist, and I'm going to let Joe kind of put that out to you. Joe, do you have a microphone over there by you?
I do. The question is it on?
It is. Ooh. We hear you.
I was over here trying to find what the switch was for on.
Okay. It's all yours.
So welcome to all of you. I'm glad to have you in Sacramento. You guys, it's been a little bit since you were here. Were you here last year?
Yeah.
You were here last year? So it's been at least 12 months. Or 2 years ago, 24 months then. So welcome back. Glad you're here. It is the best-kept secret, and we're certainly glad about that. Congratulations to the council on holding yet another successful convention and bringing everybody together. I want to thank Donna and the council's leadership for the work that you do and continue to partner with us and partner with all of our communities in advancing the employment and independence and equality of persons with disabilities. Tony and Junie were planning to be here, but there's this thing called budget hearings. And in spite of our efforts to decide when they should be scheduled, we always get overruled. And so as luck would have it, they were scheduled this afternoon. Tony did say that if he finished in time, he'd run out here. I hadn't heard that he's here yet, which means the hearings are taking longer than anticipated. And thank you for the invitation for us to be here to share this time with you and to present and to listen to the voice of the council and its stakeholders. So I'm going to make a little correction here. I'd like to introduce Elena Gomez, who is our assistant deputy of the Specialized Services Division. And I'll turn the mic over to her here in a minute so she can say a few words. And it so happens that in Specialized Services Division, we have two Gomez's. They're both female. This one is Elena. The other one that is going to be here tomorrow is Rosa. And I'm told they look a little bit alike. But, hey, what can I say? And Rosa, both Elena and Rosa, this is the first opportunity that they have to come to the council after their appointments. So the other thing that I'd like to do before I turn this over to Elena is we have a number of DOR staff in the room, and I'd like to give them a big shout out for the frontline work that they do each and every single day with our consumers, getting them the services that they need to get to work and become independent. So let me stop here, turn this over to Elena, and then as Donna said, we're going to change up this format a little bit this year, but I'd like to give Elena a moment here.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. As you heard, can you hear me? Okay. It's louder? Okay. I'm practically kissing the microphone as I'm speaking. Good afternoon, everyone. As you heard Joe just mention, we do have another Gomez in our division, but I can assure you we do not sound alike. So you'll find that out tomorrow. Okay. So I will, you know, it's really truly an honor to be here with all of you today. I've always enjoyed attending this type of conference when you have a group of individuals coming together with shared concerns, issues, and even more importantly, a shared vision. It's a wonderful opportunity to network, collaborate, develop solutions. So I want to thank Donna again for her leadership in coordinating this conference and inviting the Department of Rehabilitation to participate. Okay. So, I'm going to turn it over to Joe now.
You want to set it up, Donna? Donna, do you want me to set it up or your point?
Sorry. I got asked a question at the same time.
Multitasking.
And something disappeared that was here, and it sprouted like somebody's large print program. So what we'd like to do, John, I'm sorry it sprouted legs. I apologize. What we would like to do, because I've heard from a number of members that folks would like to have a little bit of time to do a bit of a mini town hall with the Department of Rehabilitation. And so what I would like to do, if our volunteer is ready with a microphone, is I would like to open it up for people to ask questions of Joe. And before we start with that part, I would like you to please keep in mind that the questions that we need you to ask are systemic questions. I know our specific situations are very important to us about the things that we deal with directly. And so what I'd ask you to do is think of it in the context of a systemic question. And I'd like to go ahead and open it up. Please stand up if you have a question. Do not sit down so that folks could know that you are interested in asking a question. And our volunteer is heading over to our first person. And please, no comments, but we would like questions, so that everyone can get a chance. And if you'd state your name and ask your question. Thank you.
Hi, Joe.
Brooks.
Come.
It's not on.
It's not.
I can't hear. I don't. Okay, that's now it is. Okay, there you go.
You have
go.
To
okay.
be close.
All right, I'll get it right up to. Oh, hello, Joe. This is Warren Cushman. And my question is, essentially, how do you recruit, retain, or develop a good RCB or a rehab counselor?
Great question, but I have to ask one question first. Are you a Giants fan? Whew, thank goodness. I thought my first question
Go
could
Giants.
Not come from a Dodgers fan. and this is great timing because our director just showed up. Tony, you're... Come on up. So before I answer your question, I'm just going to give Tony a moment to say a few words of welcome.
Thank you, Joe. I'm Tony Sauer. I have the privilege of working with Joe and Elaine at Department of Rehabilitation. So I'm glad I was able to make it, and looks like you're running a little late, which worked out perfectly for me.
So and Tony, we're engaged in a bit of a town hall. So Warren has the first question, and thank God he was a Giants fan. Okay, so Warren, your question was, how do we recruit, hire, and retain good counselors? Well, the first thing to recruiting and hiring and retaining good counselors is to get people that want to be good counselors to get their credentials and to become qualified to take the examination, which is an online examination. And then the online examination makes you eligible to apply for vacancies. The second thing that must occur once an individual takes that examination is to be aware of the vacancies that are available and submit their application and do a sufficient job in their application so that they rise to the top. So think about it, when we get 100 applications, we're not likely to interview 100 people. So when you prepare your application for a position, you certainly want to distinguish yourself amongst those many candidates so that when the screening process takes place, you surface, you're then invited for an interview, and great counselors prepare well. They come in, they do an excellent job of conveying their skill, their aptitudes, their attitudes, their talents, and their competencies. And the panel says, yes, and they offer them the job. And then they come on board, and then, of course, we provide orientation and training and all of those types of resources so that they can become skilled in our practices and our procedures and the governances that they have to within. And they're assigned caseloads and go to work. Now, in terms of retention, frankly, one thing that everybody should know is that when you apply to become a civil servant and to work for the state of California, that salary has already been determined. The benefits have already been determined. So people that get hired and then say, I want more pay or I would like more benefits, you got to really think about that first. Because as much as Tony would like to do so, as much as Elena, myself would like to do so, we don't have the authority or the ability to change any of those things. We are always, however, pursuing and influencing the opportunity to increase the wages for our counselors. Clearly, we know that they are our front line. They're where the rubber meets the road. They're direct contact with that consumer. But it is a civil service process that goes through. So, Elaine, anything or Tony, anything to add to that?
One thing I did want to mention, in order to really have a viable candidate pool, we really strongly encourage individuals with disabilities, including those that are blind and visually impaired, to really consider rehab counseling as a potential graduate degree program. That's where it starts. We need individuals who are interested in becoming rehab counselors to apply to these graduate rehab counseling programs, and we have a number of them throughout the state.
Joe? And Elena just triggered one more thought for me. If you are planning to go to school and you are in school and you're looking for a money-making venture, this isn't it. Okay? I mean, let's be serious. Civil service isn't it. However, if you're looking to change people's lives and make a huge difference, then this is it. The people that do this work, they don't do this for the money. Yeah, we all have to make a living. Yes, we have to feed the family and pay the rent and pay the bills and all that. But this is really about your contribution to persons with disabilities as much as it is anything else.
Yeah. Hi, Tony and Joe. This is Charles Navarrete. And I am a Dodger fan. But what I wanted to ask you is, in the past 5 years, how have the employment placement figures been going for the specialized department, and how do they compare with the national figures?
Okay, so is that with or without a crappy economy? Because let's be serious, in the past 5 years, things have looked anything but rosy. And it's just been across the board in every sector and every walk in every industry. What I can tell you, Charles, a good place for you to get a barometer of that, and in fact, we will be publishing the fifth biannual specialized services report to the legislature. It'll be published this July. We know that year after year, from the inception of the Specialized Services Division, the trend up through this last year or so has been upward, both in numbers and as well as wages earned. Because it's not just about going to work. I mean, that clearly is what we're all about. But we want people to go to work at a sufficient wage so that they're able to get out of poverty, get off benefits, and truly become independent. So the biannual report is on our webpage. It does continue to trend upward, and we will publish it again here in July. So obviously when we do, we share that with all of our communities, and I'm sure Donna will get a copy of that, and we'll share with the council as well. Your other question about how do we compare? It's a great question. I don't know the specific answer, although those who are so inclined can go to the Rehabilitation Services webpage, and they provide statistics and all that kind of stuff. But I caution you to compare numbers to numbers when the foundation of those numbers are not necessarily the same. So here in California, we are in what is called order of selection. And in order of selection, it means that we serve the individuals with the most significant disabilities first, and then significant disabilities and so forth and so on. In other states, that may or may not be the case. The other factor that becomes, the other issue that becomes a contributing factor is the salary, or not the salary, but the economic condition of the various states. So, and Charles, if I remember correctly, you used to be a civil servant. You still are. Good. So you're familiar with the term furlough? Okay. Let me translate furlough. It's reduction in the amount of time available for the counselors to do their work. And so for the last number of years, we have had furloughs, and it's ranged, and they will be done. The last one will be this June, and then furloughs will be done, at least as far as we know at this point. Other states may not have had that. So there's a lot of variables that go across when you're talking the comparison. And the other thing when you compare, I also encourage you to look at those dollars because, you know, having, I mean, I think in blind field services, and I don't recall specifically this year, I know it's down this year, but in prior years it was 640 a week. And that was a third higher for the department. So on an hourly rate, the department's overall average is $12. Blind field services is 19. That's a significant difference, and I think that's attributed to a lot of different factors, but it's a good upward trend. So,
okay, there we go. Thank you. We have three final questions, and that would be Charlene, I believe, Kathy Skivers, and David Jackson, and then we'll conclude our town hall so that we can hear a few remarks prepared by the department. So if we'll take those three questions. Charlene?
I'm waiting for the mic. There it goes. Yes, my question is for people who are not looking for employment but are looking for independence. So many new high-tech items are available. For instance, the portable cameras. I could take that to the store for the first time. Read what is on the shelf instead of going through and going, as the term goes, blind as to what I'm buying. Not knowing prices or anything. I'm wondering what DVR is doing towards making some of that high-tech equipment available to people who just live for everyday life so they can join society.
So, I'm sorry, I'm going to try to make sure that I understood your question correctly. So your question is, if you're not coming to the department for employment, how are we making assistive technology available to you?
Correct, for independent living direction.
Understood. Okay, so there's a couple of different things. And first of all, I want to step back and provide a greater context because I think it's really important for all of us to keep this in mind. I think most everybody in this room has heard of SB 105. Okay. Now, for those of you who haven't had the opportunity to read it recently, one of the main push behind SB 105 and the report that the legislature requires every year is on competitive employment. And there's really good reasons for that. So a lot of the efforts that are underway are to improve both the quantity as well as the earnings of competitive employment. Now, people will say, does that mean you're not going to do, quote, homemakers? Never said that. My question is, what do we need to do And we are at about 300, 350, give take the economy of the last few years. My question has been, what do we need to do to get 800 blind and visually impaired individuals earning $1,000 a week? What is it we need to do? Because that's what we need to be doing. There are a number of other services that support the question you're asking. We have Assistive Technology Act program that support those services. We have community-based, I can't think of them, the CBOs. There are AT closets that are scattered throughout California that provide for some of that. We have loans that provide some of that. If you are my age or older, you're eligible for the OIB program, which provides independent living services. And, yes, the Department of Rehabilitation still has provided independent living services on a case-by-case basis where it is both necessary and appropriate. But you guys are also, you guys, all of us, not you guys, are also aware of our continued struggle to do more with less. And frankly, it's becoming these days do less with less because the more isn't there. We got through with the woes of the state budget. If that wasn't bad enough, we started to see a little sunlight, and the feds had decided to institute their budget woes, which they are very gladly sharing with all of the states. So that's a forever challenge for all of us who are providing the services and trying to allocate the resources.
We're getting a microphone over to Kathy.
To you. Oh, there
it is. It's talking. Yeah.
I'm Kathy Skivers, and hi, Tony and Joe, and don't know Elena yet, but I bet I will. And I have been thinking about employment as we have ever since SB 105, and for me, for 50 or 60 years before that. And I'm concerned, we always know that the more unemployment there is among people in general, and there's plenty of unemployment now, that usually means fewer jobs available for anybody that isn't sighted and able to get around on their own. And I know that we have the vending stand program, and we're working very hard to get people in education, and they're getting skills, and some of our people are getting jobs, and I think you're doing pretty well at that. But I've been concerned for a long time about the people who are out there who don't have the skills to maybe get an education, a full education. We at other times had jobs that people could do, like piano tuning and other kind of skills, typing and transcription and things that are not as much as they were. And I think what I'm trying to get to is, do you have any ideas or are you working on anything to help those people who have to have different kinds of jobs? And are we doing anything about seeing what's happening in other states to do different types of work? And what, how are you set up to help people who want to do a job that maybe isn't the usual thing that they do? What do you do for people who are, what's available to help people who are not going to be candidates for college and so on?
Thanks, Kathy. This is Tony. It's great to see you. So I'll start that and I'll let Joe go specifically for blind field services. You know, our department assists people wherever they are in life. When somebody comes to our department, as long as they have, as Joe said, we're in order selection, significant disability or most significant disability, we will work with them. And whether that work is to help them be retooled to do something in the trades, if they were doing trades and they don't want to work in an office, or help somebody get their law degree, which we've helped many people in blind field services and other programs get their law degree, their medical degree, nursing degrees. So we help folks all over the place. So I don't know that that has changed. What I think the trend is happening nationally, not just amongst people with disabilities, is there are fewer and fewer jobs that are unskilled. So it makes it harder for folks who don't have the cognitive ability to use their brain versus their brawn. And that is going to be more difficult. That's a reality that we face. So, Joe, do you want to add to that?
Yeah. Just a couple of additional thoughts. And Kathy, nice to hear from you here. Frankly, there's a number of people in this room who don't need to introduce themselves. I think you're probably one of those. So, but A couple things here. And I started this by saying that the partnership that we have with the council and with the rest of our community is what really moves the needle and makes things go forward. And Kathy, I think you and I have had this conversation a number of times, and I believe you would agree that the pursuit of employment doesn't start when the clock makes you 18 years old or 20 years old. The skill set that's necessary for that starts a lot earlier in life. And I frankly think that's something that we all need to take a very strong look at, is how do we start to get our individuals who are blind and visually impaired from youth on ready for employment. And it does not need to be an attorney. The world has enough of those. Sorry, Jeff. But the world has enough attorneys, okay? But not everybody should be an attorney or has the skill set, let alone the desire to be an attorney. But we need to get people ready for the workplace. Whether you're an attorney, a doctor, a teacher, a skilled laborer, whatever it may be, there are certain competencies, there are talents that are necessary, and we got to start much earlier at that. Peter Dawson and I, and you guys had the opportunity to hear from Peter in the fall conference down in Del Mar. Did I remember that right? I remember that right. Peter and I have had numerous conversations about what does it take for a blind person to be successful? What are the talents that they need? What are the competencies they need? And I'll tell you that one of the things that we are talking about and we will be talking about is interview number one. When you show up, you, whoever the consumer is, to have a conversation with your counselor, that conversation has to be about where you are and where you want to be, and then how do we collectively work together to get to that point. And not everybody, again, not everybody is going to want to be an attorney. So if you just want to go out and do the work you just, what do we do? Because we should and do provide that service.
Okay. Am I on? Hello, Tony and
Joe. This is David Jackson.
So my question is, there are a lot of entities who are looking for work. We have youth. We have returning service people, both war theaters. We have seniors who are looking for work. What is the department doing in terms of reaching out to employers and HR departments, letting them know that there are extremely bright and very motivated folks who, for whatever issues, may be visually impaired, may be blind, may be hard of hearing, deaf, blind, they're seeking employment. What is the department doing with employers and HR departments?
I'm going to start this, and I think Tony and Elena are probably going to weigh in here too. So there's a number of different things that we're doing. First of all, we have hires are local. Local not meaning crazy. Local meaning in your neighborhoods, okay? Because I can hear Donna's wheels over there already turning. Hires are local. Employers, generally speaking, are local. The local relationships can make a huge difference. And across the state, our various local, whether it's counselors or supervisors or offices, building those local relationships goes a very, very long way. Each of us, in what we do, when we do it, how we do it, and where we do it, sets a model, sets an expectation, and shows the rest of society that we are more than capable and have the talents to succeed and to bring to them the values that their companies, that their businesses need. Within the department, we also have our workforce development section. And we're doing both a lot of work on the state level as well as a lot of work on the national level with the National WorkNet to break down the barriers with the large employers, the corporate level, you know, the Walmarts, the bigger companies across the nation that can certainly make big hires, Home Depot, et cetera. So we're doing that. The more recent thing that we've also undertaken with our reconfiguration of our service delivery is the employment coordinator. And so those employment coordinators are intended for some of that very purpose that you're asking about, where we can go out and build that relationship and get those individuals ready. But I'll tell you the number one thing that we hear routinely from employers: when I have a job opening, I can't wait 6 months. When I have a job opening, I need somebody now. I need them ready. I don't need them to go learn AT. I don't need them to go learn their soft skills. I don't need them to figure out their transportation. They have to have that, because that's when I hire them, that means I want them to go to work. I will also tell you, they're just within our division, and certainly even more broadly within our department as a whole, and Tony and I say this repeatedly, we want to hire persons with disabilities, but they've got to take the exams. They've got to be ready, and they got to apply for the jobs. And guess what? They're not. And we can't hire them if they don't apply. So apply, and get ready. You know, believe me, the state is hiring. We're hiring people. But people got to be ready. Apply. Be ready.
I'll jump in here. As Joe touched on, our VR modernization, as we roll out this year, we're moving along with our VR modernization. We did the pilots. And one of the components of that is an employment coordinator. And that person's role, depending on the community they live in, whether we have outside employment coordinators we can work with or not, they'll either be helping those outside coordinators, employment coordinators, and job developers, or in some cases in more of the rural areas where we don't have outside folks we can hire, they'll be doing job development and employment coordination, just like my counselor did 35 years ago. He knew our community. He had the ability to go out in the field. The problem that we've had over the last 35 years since I was a consumer is the caseloads have increased because the funding hasn't increased along with the number of people that's going in. So our counselors haven't had the time to do some of the work that they would like to do. That's one of the issues. So it is hard to do that job developing and employment coordinating when you don't have the time, when you're busy with consumers. As Joe said, we have the National Employment Network we're working with, our own workforce development section. We have employers that come to us. Walgreens is an example. They would like to hire a lot more people with disabilities. The problem is we have informed choice. If a consumer comes in our office, chances are they're not wanting to be a warehouse worker or a clerk at Walgreens. If they do, wonderful. We can probably find a quick placement for them if they happen to live near one of the Walgreens distribution centers. That's the other thing, is they have to move many times. So there are jobs out there, as Joe mentioned. Folks have to be flexible, willing to go to work and be ready, and oftentimes start odd hours. Many times folks have unreasonable expectations. Listen, I want to make $22 an hour. I would like to work from 2 until 4. I need an hour for lunch, and I need to be able to get there, you know, within 3 blocks of my house. And those are unreasonable expectations. We have to help folks understand that. And as Joe mentioned, people need to apply for jobs, whether it's in state service, federal service, you know, for Walgreens or wherever. And then they have to work. They have to show up and do the work. And all those things are parts of it. We have amazing staff. And I see Tricia back in the back, one of our former amazing counselors who now is supervisor, and she's got amazing staff. But it's a cooperative agreement with the consumer, our staff, and then the employers many times want to hire us. There are some who don't, and we know those, and we stay away from those. But there are many employers who would like to work with us. Anyway, it's a comprehensive look at what we're doing, and I really do think through our VR modernization, as we roll it out, and it's throughout our whole organization by the end of this year, we will do a lot more with the employers out in the field. So, Elena, do you want to add anything?
Well, okay, so...
Okay, I just kind of wanted to piggyback on what Joe said in terms of apply. For instance, we have a vacancy, which is the program manager for the Older Blind Services Program. We received, I think, to date about 80 applications, and only an application from one blind individual. You know, I'm very disappointed. We're always, you know, very much interested in hiring individuals with disabilities, but If we don't receive an application, we're not even given the opportunity to consider a person with a disability for the position. So again, it goes back to apply, apply, apply. So if you know of anyone who's interested, please encourage them to apply for this position.
She's aware of the jobs.
Okay. Okay, so I'm told we're going to provide a few brief dates here. Donna said we have until 4 o'clock, and so we'll be able to do that. So, I know, Mitch, you don't get that kind of time either. I get it. All right, so why don't we start with...
Well, before we start really quick, I would like everyone to please give a huge applause for the first time of doing a mini town hall. Thank you for being here to do that. Thank you.
But, you know, when Don asked me if I do that, sure, why not? The worst I can ask is a question I don't have an answer to. So, and you get to answer it. She goes, okay. So, so we have a couple of different updates, and so we're going to be mindful of your agenda. We're going to start. Tony's going to talk a little bit about the sequestration, and then Elena's going to touch a little bit about on DOR's budget, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, and Donna, you did say 2:45, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so we have just about 20 minutes. I'll talk briefly. Most of you by now have probably heard of sequestration. I would imagine 3 or 4 months ago, no one ever heard of that term, and particularly in the regard of finance. Maybe when somebody was on a jury and they were sequestered, it was something else. But it's a process of automatically, largely across the board, spending reductions under which budgetary resources are permanently canceled to enforce certain budget policy goals. It was first authorized by the Balanced Budget and Emergency Deficiency Control Act of 1985. And what triggered the sequestration that we're now hearing about and feeling the pain of was when Congress, about a year and a half ago, agreed to do a bipartisan budget to come together. And I think there was eight or 10 folks from both parties got together. And the president suggested that out a year and a half or whenever it was out, that if they didn't come up with the budget agreement, then we would have these awful cuts that they were calling sequestration that would never happen. Well, they did not come together. And now those cuts that were seen as so awful that Congress had never let happen, we are facing. And for our department, we don't have enough time to go through all these talking points, but I'll just share with you that it looks like for most of our programs, we're looking at a 5% federal cut to our budget. Now, our vocational rehab program, which is the Title I of the Rehabilitation Act, we get a cost of living increase every year based on the Consumer Price Index, which is about a little over 3% for this last year. So our net cut for our bulk of our programs, which is the Title I Voc Rehab, will be about 2%. And we can actually mitigate most of that cut without having to close our doors and go into deeper order of selection. That's not the case for OIB and independent living. They will be having the sequester 5% cut at this point. That's what we're projecting. So I don't want to get too much more detail. It's very complicated, but essentially we believe we can mitigate most of that 5% cut, at least for the upcoming year. So I'm going to up there, and Elena, are you going to talk about overall budget? Okay.
Okay. For the Department of Rehabilitation, the budget for the upcoming year, we're seeing a total budget of $414.2 million, and that is a decrease of $7 million from the prior fiscal year, which is 2012-13. And that $7 million reduction is a result of removing the spending authority that we have from ARRA, which, as all of you know, that discontinued. Out of the $414.2 million, $56.5 comes from our general fund. That's the state contribution. And the $346.7 million is federal fund. And then we also have an additional $11 million that primarily comes from my reimbursement, so from Social Security Administration. We also have some dollars from my Venny Stam Fund and Traumatic Brain Injury Fund. Now, in regards to positions, we have a total of 1,823 positions within the Department of Rehabilitation. Out of the 1,823 positions, 1,731 are permanent positions, and the remaining 92 are temporary help. Our case services budget is $181.4 million. So that's pretty much it for the budget for the Department of Rehab. Is there any other clarification?
No, that's good. So I'm going to, because in honor of your timeline here, I'm going to talk briefly about some of the specific program updates around the Specialized Services Division, and I mentioned the hire of Elena. First of all, I want to thank the BAC and the council's representation on the BAC and their participation in the number of the leadership hires that we've made within the division. It's been very, very beneficial to have the community's participation. Matthew Millspaugh has been hired as the assistant administrator at OCB. Jay Harris was hired a year ago, and you've heard us talk about the older individuals who are blind program manager that is vacant. That's because Jay was one of those talented blind people that we hired, and so talented that within a year of being here, he was promoted to manager over the independent living section, and so now we have a vacancy that we are recruiting for. In case I forgot to tell you guys this, you got to take the exam, and you got to do well, and you got to apply so that we can hire. And I make that shameless plug every place I go, and I'll continue to make it. And no, it's not an easy process to do it, but, you know, getting to work is not always the easiest things in the world. So, besides, it was on my notes to mention. Okay. So, we have the department's high-level strategic plan that has been ongoing for some time. That high-level shell is on the department's webpage. We continue to work on the program-level strategic plans, and we'll continue to do so. The biggest barrier to that is my time, because every time I think I'm going to work on it, somebody redirects my focus for the day, week, month type of thing. RSA came to California in January of this year to conduct a review of the Business Enterprises Program. They did an exit interview at the end of that week. To the best of our knowledge, they had a number of great recommendations that we are working on, but we had no findings. Now, we haven't received the report yet, so we'll see when we get it what it says, but that's the story as they left. The RSA 15, and for those of you who don't know what that is, it's the federal report card on the Randolph Shepherd program that is submitted each year. It was submitted for the year or for the time period ending September 30th of 2011. It's been published. It's been distributed. It's on DOR's webpage. Good news about that. Average vendor income went up to $64,000. Okay, you know what the criteria is to get into BEP? You got to be blind. Hey, who can guess number two? You have to be a citizen of the United States. Kathy, you don't qualify, do you? Okay. I have to hook with Kathy because she'll get me later. I know it.
Those darn Canadians,
Tony says. So those are the two criteria. Now, it is not an easy work. It is perishable cash, just in time. And if you think you're going to work from 4 to 2, you're crazy. But $64,000 a month, average. Median income also went up, which is all good news. The 70B report, the older blind report, also a report card on the program that has also been published and distributed. It's on DOR's webpage. The number of consumers served went up by 1,000. Okay, with the same dollars, although largely a lot of that was capacity building thanks to the ERA dollars. And I'll tell you what's really cool about the OIB report being submitted these last 2 years is that it was done on time. And so we largely and wholly own that or owe that to our providers for getting those reports in on time, because without that, we can't submit on time. So we're very, very glad of that taking place. OIB service area, we have a major initiative underway that hopefully you have heard about, because I know I mentioned it here before. We're working with our community, including the Blind Advisory Committee, establishing service areas, methodology to distribute to and within those service areas, and that project continues. So if you're interested in that, keep an eye out. Information will be coming out in the next coming weeks. Let me also talk about the state price schedule. That is a major, major, major initiative that we've been working on. It seems like forever, although I think it's only been 2 years. And CCB, Donna, and Jeff participated in that, huge to the outcome that we have, which is an endorsed, acceptable tool to the Department of General Services, who has the responsibility for the procurement vehicles that will expedite the procurement of assistive technology for both our consumers as well as individuals within the state system, so that they can have their accommodations met in a more timely and expeditious fashion. And what's really important about that is we have a number of other initiatives underway to improve the quantity, the number of individuals that are hired by the state. And one of the things that we heard repeatedly from our partners within the state is a need for a methodology that would allow accommodations to be provided in a more seamless fashion. We believe this is going to be huge in that, and so we're very glad that it's the policy is out. We're still rolling out its implementation. It'll certainly will be a few months before we fully realize its full impact, but we think it's a great, great start. Yes, we recognize any policy, any practice, any procedure will always have room for improvement. We'll always continue to look at that. I'm trying to skip some of these little details in the interest of time. CRP policies, we've been asked to look at those. We are also beginning to look at those, because those tie back into the state price schedule, and so that effort is underway as well. And then I also wanted to talk to you, one of the other major initiatives that we have going with the department, and these things may seem minor, but let me just put it in some context. The Business Enterprises Program, the way that we capture our data is through Excel, Access, Word, and a legacy data system. Within each of these, you can have multiple either sheets or books or platforms. None of these capture the same information. They don't talk to each other. So that's the electronic version of the hammer and the chisel for data collection. And we have undertaken initiative here to procure a software package that will integrate all of these data platforms into a single platform that will be interfaced, that will allow us to extract real-time data from our locations, our equipment, our expenditures. This will vastly improve our ability to administer the program, to provide the information to the vendor community as well as other interested parties in a much more timely fashion. So we're very much in the midst of that. This too, in case you guys don't know this, within the civil service and the state process, nothing ever happens fast. But you do have to be tenacious, and you just keep moving forward, and we are making progress. And so at some point, I'm going to come back to CCB and say, guess what? It's implemented. Won't be tomorrow, but we're moving in that direction. Don't know how we're doing on time, but I think I've hit the highlights, and unless you or somebody has a question.
Okay. We will, depending on how long it is, we'll start with one question. Please stand up. If someone has a question, the first person to stand up gets the mic. All right. That town hall was awesome, wasn't it? Well, I just want to, I don't know if you have any closing words, but I definitely want to thank you for being here today and being flexible and trying something new with us. I think it was a great success. Thank you. If we can turn off those cell phones, please. Turn off those cell phones. Okay.